Sheffield Live, made in Sheffield, made by you.
Do you want to get your message heard? With low advertising rates and great sponsorship opportunities, Sheffield Live can help you reach thousands of local people. Get your campaign on Sheffield Live. To find out more about advertising on Sheffield Live, write to advertising@sheffieldlive.org or call 0114 281 4082. Do you like Sheffield Live? Why not become a friend of Sheffield Live? Sheffield Live is a community radio station, and friends of Sheffield Live are people in the community who make a regular donation to keep Sheffield Live on the air. Join the Friends of Sheffield Live by writing to friends@sheffieldlive.org or go online to sheffieldlive.org/friends.
Good morning, it's Sarah Evans-Alwyn recording Between the Lines for Sheffield Live on 93.2 FM. You can also find me on the Simple Radio app at 11 a.m. on Tuesday mornings and on Revolve 77 at Mixcloud, and I'll post the link wherever I post this as well. And today, it's actually Boxing Day, but this will go out on the 2nd of January in the new year. And I'm walking down Ecclesall Road and it's picking up a little bit. People are in coffee shops. Some shops are open. And it seems like everyone's come out for a little walk, perhaps as a break from inside on Christmas Day. And I'm walking towards a favourite haunt of mine. I mean, I'm not going to ever take you somewhere I don't like going myself, but you might be surprised at this choice. So today, I am risking life and limb crossing Ecclesall Road. Oh, let's watch out here for the slightly crazed drivers. Maybe they've had one too many on Christmas Day, I don't know. And I'm about to cross the road over to Cemetery Avenue, and I'm going to take you into Sheffield General Cemetery. And maybe I should put this down while I cross the road and rejoin you in the cemetery. Okay, well, I am safely in the cemetery. I managed to cross the road without maiming myself. And here I am, walking through a really, actually very quiet part of Sheffield. So you'll notice there's a running theme to the places that I go to in Sheffield. They tend to be a little bit quieter. Certainly this time of year, the General Cemetery is dead. Oh, I do make myself laugh. Okay, well, I'm about to actually read you a piece that I wrote some time ago, but it was published by Paul Scraton on the Elsewhere website. And I should say thank you to Paul for putting a little bit of my work on his website. And he's a lovely person to work with. And Elsewhere is a really interesting website to which people can contribute writing or photographs or videos to do with the outdoors, the outside, the natural world, or, you know, any kind of outside activity. It doesn't have to be natural, I guess. And just to say that Paul himself is a writer and he's written some fantastic books, a couple that have been published by Influx Press. That's a publisher that I really love. I've never read a dud by Influx Press. All their books seem superlative. I think they're going on have gone on a bit of a hiatus, but you can still purchase books from their website. They're a good indie press. And Paul has written In the Pines with photographs by Imelt Seymour, and it's a really beautiful book. It's a thin volume, but it's really packed with a sort of atmospheric emotion, And it is all about natural spaces, and it is all about forests. And, you know, it's hard to distill or describe, but it is beautiful. It's well worth a look. He's also published a book called Built on Sand, also equally good. Those are the two that I've read, but I know he's got a big body of work. And if you're interested in Paul's work, he has a lovely website called The Winding Trail, which he runs with his wife, Catherine Schoening, who is a photographer. You can see her beautiful photographs on there, a lot of their adventures on there. And his daughter, Lottie, has designed the logo for it. So it's a real family-run thing, which I love about it. And I guess it shows their passion for doing outdoor travel-y things. I love it. Also, you can see his work for the Paha Trust in Nepal, which is a very worthy cause where Paul is often fundraising for them. And I think he's recently been out to Nepal. Amazing. Anyway, I ramble on because this work that I'm about to read to you was first published by Paul on Elsewhere. So you can check it out on there if you really want to. The other thing that I need to say is that if you want to find out more about the Sheffield General Cemetery, which is a lovely place, you can go to gensem.org. That's G-E-N-C-E-M.org. And, you know, they do tours and the like. You can find out all about the history of it. Anyway, here's a bit of my rambling. Walking is a habit that I've come to appreciate more as I've grown older, being perhaps more naturally attuned to the lure of the motor vehicle and a slightly horrified witness to the end of its golden age. The first time I was allowed behind the wheel of my parents' car was when I was 17 in 1995. It was a Honda Civic, which my mum had astutely insisted on buying over any other make, as it had been Car of the Year in 1984. It was a terrifying experience for my dad, even though we were in the relative safety of a deserted car park near where we lived on the breezy west coast of Singapore. In fact, it had such an impact on us both that I didn't actually learn to drive until I was almost 21. And my dad played no further part in it, having died not long after that first test drive, though not as a result of trauma from that event, I should add. It's one of my funnier, fonder memories of him. His pulling up the handbrake and telling me that perhaps this was enough and shouldn't we head back for dinner, to which shell-shocked I agreed without protest. I have always liked to jump in a car, either as a passenger, inevitably nodding off to the soporific rhythms of the engine like a milk-addled baby, or as a driver, the promise of excitement just round the corner, armed with an A to Z or road mac. Even the routine commute to work has in the past had the appeal of solidarity and often hilarity generated by the carpool or, when undertaken solitarily in recent years, the moments of quiet, cocooned in the seal of the horseless carriage speeding down the motorway or more usually stuck in rush hour traffic. Now, middle age has allowed me to enjoy a walk more. I used to run and felt good doing it until I didn't. My knees and hips still protest at the damage done running daily in my 30s, and my body in its 40s has so far appreciated a good walk instead. And so the whoosh and vroom of my wheels or the urgency of the run has given way to the slower, more wholesome pleasures of a ramble. I have a lovely friend who once told me she was a committed pedestrian. And even though I rolled my eyes internally, she really meant it so that I wouldn't go out of my way to give her a lift. And I do appreciate her turn of phrase. I'm certainly not a committed pedestrian yet, but maybe one day. It is in this one respect, walking around walk, that I was quite well prepared for the UK brand of lockdowns in the pandemic, switching to daily walking once for an hour in that first iteration of restrictions with relative ease in comparison to all the other adjustments life had in store during those slightly surreal times. I rediscovered some windy snickets and lesser used paths in those bright days when the weather was just uncharacteristically gorgeous, cloudless and un-English, walking for pleasure and release rather than to work. During consecutive rounds of restrictions, I found a favourite walk and a place of sanctuary and intense contentment. I avoided the more popular parks, eschewing them in favour of the quieter spots near my home. This takes me neatly to the Sheffield General Cemetery, or the Gen Sem, as it is sometimes affectionately known. It is probably my closest green space and woefully underused by the many people who live in the vicinity. My children have been going there for years, first to hobble round the gravestones when they were toddlers, and then latterly unaccompanied by me, to meet friends for football in the often overgrown central patch of grass, which Flattery would call a field. It turns out that this open grassy area had many more graves on it until the 1970s, when some bright spark bought up the land, wanted to build houses on it, cleared the headstones but not the remains, applied for planning permission, didn't get it, sold the land for a nominal fee back to the council. And so it goes on. In all, between the cemetery's inception in 1834, its opening in 1836, and its closure in 1978, 87,000 people were buried there, which is hard to believe given its diminutive acreage. I mean, I'm sitting here now and I can't believe that figure. There's a wonderful radio program by Tanya Hirschman, Who Will Call Me Beloved, and you should definitely check it out on BBC Sounds. And I listened to it for the first time on my way to swimming, taking a shortcut through the Sem. It was recommended to me by a friend, Sean, who I've only met briefly once at a conference, but he was so warm and kind, and I follow him on Twitter, and he's somehow part of my life now, exemplifying the very best and most miraculous part of social media. This program is beautiful, and Hirschman contemplates what she would like inscribed on her gravestone as she walks through and discovers more about the lives of the people buried in the Southern Cemetery in Manchester. The first time I listened to it, I had just read Bereaved by Dodie Bellamy, which is a selection of her essays about death and about the death and the life of her lifelong partner, Kevin Killian. Bellamy writes so beautifully and disgustingly about everything, not just death, and this book stays with me in my head and my heart. Hirschman's is a moving programme which sits well in tandem with Bellamy, actually, about love and living and remembrance, and I've listened to it more than a few times as I make my way around the Sem. I like the sound of Hirschman's voice. It's soothing and serious, reflective and exploratory. It's a multi-sensory experience, and I like the juxtaposition of other people's lives in Manchester on the lives of those lying in the Gen Sem here in Sheffield. I like to listen to podcasts on the way around, or actually mainly French synthy pop or any kind of easy dance music of the reassuringly numbing variety, so that I don't have to concentrate on lyrics but can walk to a standard 4-4 rhythm and allow my deep fried brain a gentle haziness. It's leafy and quiet, and there's always a sense of calm, even if on the odd occasion you catch a gathering of fervent dogs and their walkers, or the enthusiastically demented toddlers from the nearby forest school schlepping about in all weathers. The cemetery is not a maudlin place for me. Rather, it is one for contemplation before work or unwinding after. Sometimes it is a cool, shaded route to Ecclesall Road for the bus or shopping, and other times it is the shortcut to the railway station or town. Mostly, though, it's a pleasant and extremely short round walk, a way of recharging efficiently. It is beautiful in all weathers, especially in the winter when the bright of the snow sets off the Gothic and abandoned Anglican chapel at the top of the Sem so dramatically. Recently, long overdue works have begun to shore up the foundations of some of the structures in the cemetery, repairs to the catacombs, walkways, and some of the more sumptuous and overwrought memorials. This work has disrupted my walks, taking me on different paths as JCBs and workmen close down familiar routes. The voluntary team from the Sheffield General Cemetery Trust, who tend the cemetery so dutifully, continue their talks and events with good cheer. And so it happens that I attend one at the start of August on a bright, hot afternoon with my mother, who I've not seen for 3 years, to find out a little about the history of the Gen Sem and its inhabitants. And, you know, the loveliest thing about this tour is that it reminds me that Sheffield is not only a place of industry, but also necessarily of subversion. There are many beautiful monuments to the big names of the men who were cornerstones of the economic success of this city. But most pulsating, poignant, belligerent of all is the more modest gravestone of the Chartist and agitator Samuel Holbury, who died in York Castle at the tender age of 27 after being made to work the treadmill illegally, a punishment which sounds barbaric and desperate. Peter Wingfield, our volunteer tour guide, tells us that in death, Holbury became a martyr and 50,000 people came to the funeral, which was a big deal at a time when the entire population of Sheffield only totaled 150,000. The Chartists were trying to secure the vote for working men. It is so moving to see Holbury's headstone, which is in the nonconformist section of the cemetery and today reads as urgently as ever a utopian, idealistic epitaph. His headstone reads, "Sacred is the memory of Samuel Holbury, who at the early age of 27 died in York Castle after suffering an imprisonment of 2 years and 8 months, June 21st, 1842, for advocating what to him appeared to be the true interest of the people of England. Vanished is the feverish dream of life. The rich and poor find no distinction here. The great and lowly end their care and strife. The well-beloved may have affections tear. But at the last, the oppressor and the slave shall equal stand before the bar of God, of him who life and hope and freedom gave to all that through this vale of tears have trod. Let none, when murmured against the wise decree that opened the door and set the captive free." Also of Samuel John, his son who died in infancy. This tablet was erected by his bereft widow. I love the ornate language, particularly the line, "Vanished is the feverish dream of life," which I will later embroider onto a tote bag in the evening while watching Netflix or cricket. Many founding fathers of Sheffield and great men and women are buried here. But this is the one final resting space that feels the most remarkable to me. And I was glad to have taken the time to attend the tour, if only to know about this grave. The Sheffield General Cemetery Trust started as the Friends of the General Cemetery, and it's run entirely by volunteers. They are cool people. We leave Peter and the rest of the tour at the refurbished nonconformist Samuel Worth Chapel, where there are teas and cakes laid out for weekend visitors. He tells me quietly and generously that if I want to know anything more, I can come and find any of them by the main gatehouse on Tuesdays, as that is when the volunteers meet to garden and to tend the grounds. You should bob down there too if you're in Sheffield and you want a moment of quiet and gentle shaded walk. You might see me stalking Holbury's graveside or haunting the gloomy Anglican chapel before work. You can find out more about the Sheffield General Cemetery and the work of the Sheffield General Cemetery Trust on gensem.org, and I hope you do that. It is a really beautiful place, so I'm going to go for a little walk round and I will rejoin you. I'm back, and as I walk round, I'm so struck by how friendships are struck through dogs. So I've just seen some dog walkers chatting to each other, and it became clear to me they had no idea who each other were. I just assumed they were, you know, lifelong friends. But I suppose that is the wonderful thing about pet owners, that there is some way of relating to one another. So I'm walking up through the cemetery and I realise that I always sound like I'm completely out of breath whenever I walk around and record. And that is because Sheffield is so very hilly. So if you've never been to Sheffield before, it's always a shock when you walk up from the railway station, you realise it's all uphill. But the good thing about the hills is that at some point you do have the chance to go downhill, which is a little bit easier on the heart, but a bit harder on the knees. Anyway, what it means is that you can see a lot of the city from a lot of the city. So as I walk up here, I can see the Hallamshire Hospital. That's where my younger child was born, well, in the Jessop Wing. And I can see some university buildings, the Arts Tower, which is a listed building, and it has a paternoster lift. I think that's why it's listed. And I'm walking up towards the Gothic Anglican chapel at the top of the Gensem. There are two chapels in this cemetery, which is incredible given it's so small. And one is the Nonconformist chapel, which has been converted into a space, and you can get a cup of tea or coffee on Saturdays here and buy a little cake. Now this chapel, the Anglican chapel, does look incredibly imposing, and I understand from gossip that it is actually owned by somebody who applied for planning permission to convert it into a home. And the rumour is that that planning permission has lapsed because he couldn't come to an agreement with his partner, his wife, about living in the cemetery. So here it is, it's sort of lying unused. And I think, as I said in the piece that I wrote, in the winter after it snowed, this place is incredible. You know, you come here and you have the muffle of, you know, the snow, and it's so atmospheric. But at the same time, you know, the place is teeming with life. I mean, I'm always moved by the fact that there is so much life in this park. I mean, I feel it's a park. I mean, I know it's a cemetery. In and amongst all the death, you know, there's, you can hear the birds. There are people that walk through it. The dogs, as I said before. And actually, I find it quite an affirming place. And I found it, you know, as I said before, a place that, you know, I found some affinity with, really, where you sort of feel comfortable and at home. There's a beautiful tree that's right next to the Anglican chapel, and I might take a photograph of it and post it with this programme. Anyway, I will leave you here. It's enough of my rambling. Just to say that you've been listening to Sarah Evans-Olwyn on Sheffield Live. This has been Between the Lines. And you can catch me every Tuesday at 11 a.m. on Sheffield Live on 93.2 FM. And I'll post a link for those of you who've missed it, where you can listen on Mixcloud. But thank you as ever for listening to this show. And be sure to tune in next week. Goodbye.
Harry Stone was a miner born, who worked to win his wages, riding down the cages and raging at the seams. He worked his store from dusk till dawn, sweet sweat and raw endeavor, black diamonds bound together by strong and simple means. He met a girl from Ironville and promised he would love her. He'd put no one above her. At last they went to town. He promised he would love her till the blackbirds stopped their singing, the mission bells stopped ringing, they close the coal pit down. Where are you tonight? Now we need you, left out in the cold, cold. Where are you tonight? Now we need you. They broke the hearts of coal, hearts of coal. They raised their children in chapel proud and lamb and to guide them. They each strove to provide them with a sense of right from wrong. When the strikes and the lockouts came, barefoot hunger tried them. All hopes were denied them, their unity held strong. Where are you lot of pain to carry. It made a cripple out of Harry. But his family came and took up his tools. And they faced the Orgreave cavalry. While the world looked on and wondered, their right to work was plundered by the statesmanship of fools.
Slowly walking down the street. to where she would have been if only they were 17.
you, I come crashing down again.
Pleased to meet you. It's really nice to meet you.
Hey, what's up? This is Craig David, and I'm right here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM.
There's something there. I was patrolling the pachinko. Zone. abducting. The CIA was on the phone. Well, such is life.
Hi, I'm Kelly Walker and you're listening to Sheffield Live.
Side to side. Sky us down.